Hi, I'm U.S. Senator Marsha Blackburn, and this is the elephant in the room.
This is going to be a surprise.
What's going to be a surprise?
This intro. Are you ready?
I'm terrified.
You should be. Okay, because you're heavily involved in this. It's not going to be too long so that we can get right into it. All right, let's try this out. Welcome to The Elephant in the Room. I'm your host, Cyrus Pearson, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Christy Lewis.
Hey, Cyrus.
Christy, let's try a game. I'll start a sentence, and you finish it. This is a podcast where we interview...
senators.
Today's guest is U.S. Senator...
Marsha Blackburn.
From the great state of...
Tennessee.
Tennessee is known for its...
country music.
And it was really surprising to find out today. Think about it.
Oh, I know what it is. Do you want to go again?
I already had it was really surprised to find out, so kick in when you want.
That there's such a thing as a chocolate chip amoeba cookie?
Indeed. So let's get into it with today's episode of...
The Elephant in the Room.
Very nice. Try this at home, listeners. Senator, kind of interesting. Do you live in Minnie Pearl's house?
Yes, I live in Minnie Pearl's old house. It is a wonderful old Tennessee farmhouse. Sitting up on top of the Harpeth Ridge. Great views back toward downtown Nashville, and then great views out to over the hills as we are there in the Nashville area. And we love it. We love being there. It's where my children have grown up. And, you know, in true Minnie Pearl fashion, we still have the price tag hanging off the front porch.
I was going to ask that.
Cyrus, I'm embarrassed. Who's Minnie Pearl?
Well, for our younger listeners, she's a comedian who played at the Grand Ole Opry for 50 years.
And was in the Hall of Fame. Country
yeah,
music
she's a
Hall
legend. She's actually an influence for Jeff Foxworthy and a lot of modern comedians you might hear on the Redneck Comedy Tour.
That's right.
Where would you like to take this? Have you redone the kitchen? Do you want to talk about music and the Grand Ole Opry?
You know, we have done a lot of building out the house. And yes, we did redo the kitchen. I don't know how you knew that, but
Well, yes,
it's one of my favorite spots. But, you know, as I said, good old Tennessee farmhouse. And we did kind of build it out and grow. Minnie Pearl gave me some of the best advice
really?
I've ever had, some of the best political advice I've ever had. She said, honey, if you just love people, they're going to love you back.
And I'm sure you found that to be true.
I think, I've found that to be very true. And one of the things that she, when we bought the house, she said, look, if you open these doors, just open them wide and let people come in and just grab them. And the house just, it really kind of has that sweet spirit, that that fun spirit. And there was quite a bit of good old country music that took place. People would come up there to Henry and Minnie's after the Grand Ole Opry was over with. So they would sit and sing till the sun come up.
Oh,
you know, so it was
talk.
Fun. If the walls could talk, yes.
Speaking of sweet and love, the key to my heart is through my stomach. And the reason I knew about your kitchen is because I have access to YouTube and you have a Marsha's Kitchen segment on there.
I do. I love to cook. And this is something that I picked up from my mother and grandmother, who were great cooks and a great host. And we always had a house full of people that were coming and going, and wonderful meals and times together. And I always loved Sunday lunch. And our family would gather on Sundays after church. And that is a tradition that Chuck, my husband, and I have continued. We've always had Sunday lunch. And we go to early church, and the kids and grands, and everyone else goes to Sunday school, then late church. And by the time they are racing in the door, I have food ready to eat and a wonderful meal and a time to just celebrate and enjoy. and hear from one another and kind of do the catch up on the week. And if one of the kids has had something wonderful happen that week, they get to sit in the king chair at the dining table, which is an old bishop's chair out of a church. So, you know, it looks really important.
Did you come up with that idea, or was that a tradition from your childhood?
No, that is something I came up with.
That's
I thought,
a great
you
idea.
Know, we need to have a special chair. And so they get the king chair, and if it's a birthday, they get the king chair. And usually, if it's a birthday, our grandsons will have helped me make the birthday cake or the cupcakes. I'm so fortunate that the grandkids love to cook, and so they will come over on Saturday, and we will pull together a birthday cake for one of their parents or... And my little granddaughter, who's 2.5 years old now, she is a cooker, as she says, and she will get in the kitchen and help me. I do blueberry muffins for her. And on Sundays, after she has lunch, that's when she gets her cookie of the week. And so she gets one cookie every week, and it is Sunday after she has lunch. And if people are not eating fast enough, she will say, "Can you stop eating?" Because when she finishes her plate, I will say, "Mary Brett, what time is it?" And she'll go, "Cookie time."
Now, is this something that you know by heart, or do you have recipes that have been passed on?
A little
on?
Bit of both.
Okay.
You know, a little pinch of sugar, a little pinch of butter.
That's what every good cook says. They always say, a bit, little bit of this and that is like getting a recipe from my mom.
That's right. That's right.
You know when you taste it.
You have recipes, but you adapt to those recipes. And, you know, we've got somebody that can't have gluten, so I've learned how to work with rice flour and almond flour and things of that nature and adapting those recipes. And so you'll fix something that's really good, and you're going, "Oh, my gosh, I should have written all this down as I was cooking."
You know what recipe you have that I actually really love? I think it was the chicken bearnaise, which I thought was...
Yes. I want to try that
It
so
was wonderful
bad.
Because it's great, because I roasted chicken, and then it's like, well, we have leftovers. What can I make that's different to mix it up? And so it's such a great way to be like, okay, this is it's a quick, easy meal. It's delicious, and you can make it the next night. And so I love that one.
Yeah, you can make it, and you can put it in the freezer if you don't use it all. And that recipe, actually, I was hosting a bridesmaid's luncheon for someone, and I thought, you know, I need something that is going to be pretty on the plate. And so the chicken, when it is in the bearnaise sauce, the way I do that, it is easier than having to cut a chicken breast or something. So, and then putting it in the puff pastry.
And it impresses so many people, you've got the puff pastry.
That's exactly right, the puff pastry, you know. So it looks gorgeous on the plate, and then serving it with a fruit salad where you've got some color in the fruit, it really does make a pretty plate.
I was opening up my kit. I was like, do you have cranberry sauce? That looks so good with the cranberry sauce. But
yeah, exactly. So, and it's easy to make a cranberry chutney. You know, you can just kind of go poof, poof, poof with a lot of your fruit and cook it down. And it really does look pretty. But I'm delighted that you like that one because it is yummy, isn't it?
I'm definitely trying that, and I'm definitely trying your cheese ball. I promise you, I'm going to put that together.
Oh, amazing, that's so recipe. Easy, and it's so good, and everybody loves it.
Easy is my style, absolutely. Yeah. We'd like to do a little segment. We have a limited time and so much to talk about called Baking with Blackburn, if that's okay with you. We're going to list a few occasions, and you tell us some of your top choices for what you would bake.
Okay.
We'll start off with a wide breadth here. Thanksgiving dessert.
Thanksgiving dessert is generally going to be a pecan pie.
Ooh, and that's how you pronounce it, pecan.
Pecan.
Mm-hmm. And it's from scratch, I'm assuming.
Of course it's from scratch. You're talking to a girl that grew up with pecan trees. I grew up in South Mississippi.
Oh, nice.
And so indeed, you know.
A child's birthday party.
A child's birthday party is going to get a cake, or it's going to get cupcakes.
Cupcakes.
I have one. This is one that drives me crazy. I get a text and it says, "What are we cooking for dinner tonight?" And it's always, you know, 5:30.
Last minute.
Yeah. Well, what's your dinner in a pinch?
Reservations.
I like that.
New neighbors moved in. You want to give them a welcome to the neighborhood dish.
Oh, generally, I will do something like a yummy peach cobbler or something of that nature.
Oh, I can't wait to move into the neighborhood. A rainy day, you're stuck in the house.
Rainy day, you're stuck in the house. You're going to make chocolate chip amoebas.
And what are those?
They are a wonderful chocolate chip cookie that doesn't have oil. It has butter and a lot of it and brown sugar, no granulated sugar.
She's hitting all the spots.
And they kind of cook up in an amoeba shape. They're not a round.
That's where it gets the name.
Cookie. So, yeah, and there's a funny story that goes with that, but we'll do that another time.
Okay, we will hold you to that. It's your husband's birthday.
Oh, apple pie. He likes this sugar-free apple pie that I cook. And so any special occasion, when I need to sweeten him up, you know, I need him to get on that honey-do list.
All right, I'm thinking this last one's probably relatable to a lot of listeners. You didn't realize you needed reservations for Valentine's Day dinner. That was your only gift, so you ended up at your wife's 10th choice of places to eat, and now it's the weekend after the holiday, and you need to say you're sorry. What do you make?
Oh, let's see.
Asking for a friend here.
You're asking for a friend. You know, at this time of year, I always make a gumbo.
Ooh.
And I love making gumbo. It's going to take a little bit of time. But, you know, a chicken or a shrimp gumbo, you just can't beat it. And it's warm and hearty. Or either I will do something like pasta night. And I do this sometimes with the kids. I make a marinara. And then also an Alfredo. And with a veggie Alfredo. And then I'll do a blush sauce, which is the combination of the two. So the kids come in and they've got the choice of three different sauces.
Oh, my.
So that's kind of at the top of their list. They love pasta dinner.
Thank you for that, for my friend. We touched upon this a little bit. I'm going to list some people. Kenny Chesney, Aretha Franklin, Tina Turner, Dolly Parton, Justin Timberlake, Greg and Dwayne Allman, Roseanne Cash. The list could go on and on. I'm sure you know what they have in common.
Yes, they're Tennesseans who are musicians and have great stories. And the wonderful thing about all of these musicians that you have listed is if people were to read their stories and see how they have triumphed in life and have used their God-given talents, it is inspirational. You think about Tina Turner and how she really elevated her music and her life and never forgot where she came from. Dolly Parton, who comes out of the hills of East Tennessee, and look what she has done for Sevier County and Dollywood and how impressive that is. Roseanne Cash, who is one of the most talented women, singers, songwriters, and has continued to mentor that life of mentoring, putting a lot of her life into having mentored people. Those, when you look at those stories, let me say this. I think that's one of the things that is so unique and wonderful about the country music industry, because you have people who like one another and they cheer for one another to be successful. It's not like the Grammys and some of these things where the music is not really music and it has become so politicized and people are turning it off. People love country music. You know, as I say, you can be a great kid, get down in the dumps, or become a drunk and find repentance. And the whole story, the whole life is told in 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. What an amazing talent. And the creative community, the music industry is really a big part of the creative community there in Tennessee. And you see a lot of what has made the economy of our state so incredibly diversified, with the logistics industry, with the healthcare industry, with the sports which falls back into entertainment, but much of the delivery systems that are there for digital delivery of healthcare and music and financial service products, much of that has originated in the Nashville area, and much of the nexus for many of those projects actually started in the music industry. Before I went to the state senate, where I led that four-year fight against a state income tax, I was in the governor's cabinet, and I overhauled what was a film commission for film, entertainment, music, and interactive technology, and really led our state from the analog to digital transition. And that was in the mid-90s. And then you saw the delivery systems for financial services and also music and also film and also TV and healthcare. You have projects and things like telehealth and WebMD. See, all of that, you get that platform that you can work from, and you adapt that application for other utilizations. And I think our creative community in Tennessee has served this nation very well. We also see it as we're looking at Space Force and next generation warfare with work being done at Oak Ridge. It's a lot of good creativity there.
If somebody's just listening to this podcast, they may not realize you are also a tough-as-nails senator and have written a book, which Christy has marked up with all kinds of Post-its. I know we are short on time, so Christy, I'll let you go ahead and jump in with some questions here.
Well, one of the things that I actually... you were talking about the musicians from Nashville and how they built their careers or their ingenuity, how they've persisted and triumphed. You know, one of the things that I loved in your story was you were talking about, you know, you looked over at your brother James and you saw that he had this good job book selling. You said, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, this is just an all-male job. And you convinced James to say, hey, let's go make our pitch and let's go do this. And that, even having the gumption to go, you know, at the point that you're doing this, you're breaking the glass ceiling very early. I mean, that's why you were covered. And
yes.
So I'd love to hear about how you, was it in your, you talk about the importance of your family dinners and how that formed you. Was it through those family dinners that you learned to have that self-advocacy? Was that gumption always in you? I'd love to hear about that.
You know, I think a lot of it was. And then I was encouraged to bring it out. My grandmother was a trailblazer, and my dad was so influential in saying, you should be able to do whatever you want to do, and so encouraging. And it's so important for parents and for employers and for mentors, a well-placed word of encouragement to a child, to mm-hmm. a young person, is absolutely vital. And the people that are a part of our team, I try to encourage them every day. I pray for them that they will feel encouragement in their job, that they will learn to make wise decisions and will seek to do better for themselves and for others. But the book selling, yeah, they said I couldn't do that. So I said, try me. And they made me live at home, wouldn't let me go away and sell because the teams were all male. So I broke that barrier. I had a great summer. The next year, they let me recruit a team of women, but they would not let us go away and meet on Sundays with the guys' team. So I had to keep them all in Mississippi, where I grew up. And then finally, by then, we're beginning to have an organization where we could let the girls go away from home and we could have a team and go out and sell books and products, educational products. And I loved that. I learned so much working door to door. It was hard. It was at least 80 hours a week. You were working on straight commission and trying to earn as much money as you possibly could to pay for college. And I did that. And teaching other people how to sell, mm-hmm. learning how to build that organization.
Life skill, yeah.
Yes, it is a life skill. And then learning also how to challenge barriers mm-hmm. that are in front of you. And, you know, as my dad would say, if you don't knock on that door, it is not going to open.
Senator, I'm sorry. We only have about a minute and a half left. Yeah. You are on four very important committees, and you're going to have to get off to those. But there is something I wanted to address because it seems so ridiculous to me. But there seems to be a school of thought out there that being a Republican and supporting women are somehow at odds with each other. Do you want to dispel that a bit?
Yeah, you know, I find that so interesting that people say that. Because when you look at the left, they want women to be in lockstep. As I said in my books, it's kind of like they want the Stepford Wives. Mm-hmm. You have to have this set of beliefs. And when you look at Republicans, we're for all women to be their best, to dream big dreams, and to make those dreams come true, and for that individual empowerment that is so important, and to open those doors of opportunity. I have said time and again, if it were up to me, I would change GOP from Grand Old Party to Great Opportunity Party and open the doors for women and for minorities who are saying, we want the best for our families, for ourselves, for the future, for all kids, and we want those opportunities. So I think we should be the Great Opportunity Party.
Senator, your staff is hovering. There's a lot we didn't get to touch upon. You're a
we'll do
business
it again.
Owner. We'd love to. We would love to have you back. And we want to thank you once again for stopping by, giving us some time, and being today's The Elephant in the Room.
You got it.
There are lots more conversations to be had with lots more U.S. senators, and I have a reason for requesting this from you. Please like or subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to this on. Now the reason. We try to release these every other week, and that way it will be added to your library whenever we come out with a new episode. Time for some credits. The Elephant in the Room is brought to you under the direction of U.S. Senator John Barrasso, and it couldn't be done without an entire team behind us. Arjun Modi, Carly Rapp, Elena Seiler, and many others who wish to remain anonymous until we have 1 billion subscribers, so help us out. Until next time, thanks for listening to The Elephant in the Room.